Podiums, an audio exploration of climbing World Cups from previous years and previous eras. I'm your host, John Bergman. I'm glad you're here. Let's talk some comp climbing. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Past Podiums and another special offering as we deviate a bit from our normal path and have some fun with another installment of the Greatest Hits series, in which I select five definitive events, definitive performances for a competitor, and we go through those events one by one. We started this Greatest Hits series a bit ago with an episode about Janja Garnbret. And so I figured for this one, why not go to a totally different era? In fact, this era that we're going to get into today is an era that we haven't really explored at all on Past Podiums. And I think a big reason for that is because video footage from this period is really hard to find. And it's certainly hard to find competition footage that's readily available to the public. But getting a little ahead of myself there. First, let me introduce the competitor for this installment. For this Greatest Hits, we're talking about five legendary performances from Chris Sharma. And so going back to the era in question, we're going to be mainly focusing on the mid to late 1990s and then a little bit of the early 2000s. And we will also break a bit, just like we did with the Janja Garnbret Greatest Hits episode, from our normal orbit for this podcast. And we'll stray a bit from the confines of the World Cup circuit. We'll loop in some other competitions, some other circuits, because I think they all hold an important place in Chris Sharma's comp career. And you certainly need to cast a fairly wide net when assessing all the comps and all the types of comps that Chris has been a part of over the years, as we'll see. First, though, a bit of biography. Chris Sharma was born in 1981 in Santa Cruz, California. He grew up kind of a beach kid. He loved being outside. He loved the ocean. He surfed. He skated. Climb trees. But really important date, at least for our purposes here, was August 31st, 1993. That was when a climbing gym opened in Chris's hometown of Santa Cruz. And this gym, which was called Pacific Edge, it's an awesome gym, it's still around, it would become basically Chris's home away from home. He started climbing there as a 12-year-old, and the gym presented him with a scene and a community and opportunities that would eventually change his life and set him on the path to become not only a professional climber, but the most famous professional climber, to become a global superstar and to become just one of the preeminent figures of the sport of climbing. Undoubtedly one of the most important people in the history of the sport. But before we get into the competitions that he eventually took part in, I thought it'd be enjoyable to go back and see or hear just what it was like when Chris was just a 12-year-old kid at the gym, not yet the superstar that he would become, but just someone learning the ropes, learning how to belay, taking youth classes, and learning how to climb. And for that, I've got a clip of an interview that I did a couple years ago for Climbing Business Journal with the founders of the Pacific Edge Gym, Tom Davis and Diane Russell, in which they share some specific memories about Chris's earliest days at the gym. I had to chop up the interview just a bit, so it might seem a little bit jumpy at parts, but I think Tom and Diane's great anecdotes illustrate what a phenomenal talent Chris was as a kid and the potential that was evident in him from such an early age. So you'll hear Tom speaking first, and then you'll hear Diane. And I think this will be a really good way to lead into Chris's greatest hits.
He was one of the, his talent became obvious probably in the first 6 to 8 months, where, you know, everybody's got their sort of natural trajectory, and then you hit the limit of your innate abilities, and then from there on you have to really apply yourself to gain, you know, a slow increase in your abilities. But he was somebody who never plateaued. He just kept getting better. And, you know, I want to say Barry Bates set a 5.12 in the lead cave,
yeah,
and you know, Chris had been climbing for 8 months and was able to climb it fairly handily. And, you know, and he didn't slow down at that point. He just kept getting better. I mean, he did actually take one of my early lead classes. It's probably like the fifth or the sixth one I taught. But, you know, that was just a little hiccup for him. He just took off from there.
And, yeah, he had a lot of help from the community. People saw him and said, hey, let's, you know, you want to go out and do this? You want to go out and do that? And he would come up to the front desk and say, hey, you want to see me, what I'm doing now? And you're like, whoa, yeah.
I mean, I'll never forget him walking over to the boulder after exactly what Diane just said, sticking his finger in a bolt hole in a hold and doing a one-finger pull-up, having never tried that before in his life. I mean, yes, his talents were obvious very quickly.
There was somebody who was going around testing the strength and doing a study.
Heather and Nick.
Heather and Nick, yeah, and they did. They had these various devices for measuring pinch strength and grip strength, and Chris was off the scale on everything. And they came there to test him.
The first big hit of Chris Sharma's career, the first truly big competition, and the first event that I'm going to put on the list was the 1995 ASCF National Championships. Let's set the table a little bit here. We're in the mid-90s, so USA Climbing, as the main governing body that we know of today for organizing and for sanctioning American competitions, does not exist yet. Instead, the governing body at the time, as the event name indicates, was the ASCF, which stood for the American Sport Climbers Federation. So the organization was a little bit different. The memberships and the events were structured in different ways. But nonetheless, I think it's fine to think of this event as analogous to present-day lead climbing nationals. But think about the date, 1995. Think back to what we just said about Chris learning to climb at Pacific Edge in 1993, shortly after that gym opened. That means he'd only been climbing for, 2 years at this point? And already, as we will see, he is at the very highest level, ability-wise and performatively. I think the fact that he could do so well with such limited experience really makes his performance here all the more epic. So the exact dates of these nationals were August 19th and 20th, 1995. The location was a gym called Mission Cliffs, which was in San Francisco, so not too far from Chris's Santa Cruz hometown. And it's worth saying that these ASCF nationals were not Chris's very first time ever competing. For example, just a week before all this, he won the Junior Nationals for his age group, which was the 14 to 15-year-old category, at a gym down in San Diego called Solid Rock. And going back even farther in time, before all this, back in the summer of 1994, he placed fifth at an ASCF regional comp that was actually held at Pacific Edge at his home gym. So he did have a little bit of comp experience, but certainly not much, which I think adds to the phenomenal narrative of this 1995 Nationals in San Francisco being such a breakout performance. Chris enters this event basically as a youthful phenom surrounded by highly accomplished veterans, adult veterans. If you look on the roster around Chris, you also see Steve Hong, who was 41 years old at the time, Doug Engelkirk, who was 33 years old at the time. So these guys are a generation older than Chris was. And Chris was not, we should say, he's not the only kid or the only teenager on the roster. These Nationals also included Tommy Caldwell, Kevin Branford, Dave Hume, Timmy Fairfield. If you want to look over into the women's division, Katie Brown was there, and all of whom are quite young as well, all of whom are approximately the same age as Chris, give or take a couple years. So together with Chris, they all in this event really showcase the onset of a whole new generation of crushers. And this ASCF Nationals was the stage for a veritable youth takeover, a new kind of teenage cadre that would basically rule climbing for the rest of the 90s. I mean, as these teenagers got a little older into their late teens and then into their early 20s, they continued to crush and in a lot of cases continued to rule at the competitive level. Unfortunately, this is one of those instances, though, where we don't have video footage of this competition publicly available. I assume it was videotaped by someone because camcorders were, I think, pretty prevalent by the mid-90s, right? But I've never seen any surviving footage. Fortunately, we do have magazine reportage, and I have one specific magazine recap here that will act as our pillar for revisiting this event. This article is in issue number 156 of Climbing Magazine, and it's titled Kids Day Out While Robin Comes Home, because another big story of this 1995 Nationals was that Robin Urbisfield she was living over in Europe, but she was coming back to the States, competing in her first U.S. comp since 1992. Now, I wish I knew who authored this article so I could give a little credit to him or her. I don't see a byline anywhere on it. It could have been Allison Osius, who was in charge of compiling comp results for Climbing Magazine at this time, so maybe a tip of the hat is due to Allison. I'm not sure. But anyway, I'll read from the recap now, kind of jumping around a bit just to capture the highlights. In the exponentially deepening men's contingent, any of some half a dozen guys could win, chiefly Doug Engelkirk, Steve Hong, and Tim Fairfield. And there were two known youth threats, Tommy Caldwell, age 17, winner at Snowbird, and the dark horse, Chris Sharma, who had been one of the only two men at the last national in Tucson to flash both quarterfinal routes, finishing 13th. First round, 7 and 4 of the 66 men placed on separate routes to avoid unduly long ISO stints flashed their routes. Round 2 for men showcased hike flashes by Sharma and David Hume, also 14, and a smart climbing Doug Engelkirk. Will Catlin of Seattle made his first finals round in 4th place, followed by Fairfield, Jason Campbell in 6th, and Steve Hong in 7th. 8th was Kevin Branford, age 15, with Ed Strang, Caldwell, and Jeff Webb tied for 9th. 4 of the 10 finalists were juniors. And then the article talks about the finals. It says, among the men, Fairfield looked ready and psyched as he approached the final roof, but suddenly slipped, taking 5th. Hong, age 41, served notice that adults can still climb, dropping from the roof for 4th. He barely escaped disqualification, however, for ignoring a judge's instructions to stop after he clipped a draw by grabbing it and using a hip kip to push the rope through the carabiner. Engelkirk, age 33, might have done the route, but didn't, falling as he headed out of the roof to take 3rd. And the kids seized the day. Sharma and Hume thrilled everyone with their close 1-2 fight to the finish. The article continues a little bit more, but that's essentially how the event concluded, how these 1995 ASCF Nationals concluded with 14-year-old Chris Sharma and 14-year-old David Hume battling it out for that top spot. Ultimately, Chris wins it. He wins adult nationals at age 14. It's one of the most monumental achievements in the history of American comp climbing. David Hume takes second place. Steve Hong takes third place. And with this win, Sharma plays a huge role in ushering in an entire new youth movement into the sport of climbing and certainly into the competition scene as well. It's kind of like climbing gets an injection of teenage energy and youthful exuberance and excitement that it has really possessed and maintained ever since. I mean, you could make a strong case that this win for Chris Sharma really changed the American competition scene forever. For the next event, actually a couple of events, we're in 1997, and 1997 would be a huge year for Chris, both in terms of fame and in terms of accomplishments, starting with a famous first ascent of the route Necessary Evil, which was done basically as an amalgamation of what Boone Speed was doing on another route, All Evil, and kind of utilizing a different start. So all that is to say that Chris's outdoor pedigree is really starting to blossom at this time. He also appears in an installment of a really popular video series this same year, 1997. It's called Masters of Stone. So his star is really rising, and it continues to rise. But before all of that, in very early 1997, he took part in the World Championships in Paris, France. The World Championships at this time were still under the organization of the UIAA, so this predates technically the IFSC. And the event features lead and speed disciplines, and Chris was participating in the lead discipline. And it spanned from January 31st to February 1st. Sadly, this is another instance where we don't have any known video footage, but we do know that Chris placed second, so he earned the silver medal, and he was flanked on the podium by Francois Petit, who earned the gold, and Francois Legrand, who earned the bronze. I think even if we can't do much of a recap here, even if we can't watch it in video form, just the result itself makes this a greatest hit because it was the first time ever that an American man stood on a world championship podium for the lead discipline. Robin Urbisfield made podiums in the women's division dating back to 1991 and then in 1993 and then in 1995. That is a legendary career in its own right for a different episode. But looking at Chris here specifically, looking at the men's division specifically, these 1997 World Championships gave some veritable proof that Chris was among the best internationally at the competitive level and not limited to the American level, the American national scene. I mean, if you look at who he beat, I mean, start with Francois Legrand, who earned the bronze here. Francois Legrand is the defending world champion going into these 1997 Worlds. And Sharma comes out standing higher than him on the podium. If you continue down the results, you see, let's see here, J.B. Trabeau is in fourth place. Elie Chaveau, who we mentioned when we looked at that 1991 World Cup from Birmingham, England. Elie Chaveau is in fifth place here. Yuji Hirayama, another name that we've mentioned previously, is in sixth place. These are all like the very best climbers of the day, and many of them are legends in their own right. And here was a teenage Chris Sharma, yet again, as we saw in the 1995 ASCF Nationals, being able to outperform them, being able to outperform the best, and being able to outclimb people that were much older than him. He was much better than most of them, at least on this day in Paris in 1997. I think of this silver medal as a significant point of distinction in Chris's career. No longer just the American comp phenom, now a global comp presence. So many milestones and competitions resided on the road ahead for him, and from here, he would just start cruising. We'll stay in 1997 for the next event, and we'll stay in Europe, but we'll go about 9 months into the future for a lead World Cup in Kranj, Slovenia. The final round for this one took place on November 9th, 1997. Again, no video is available of this, but it does create an opportunity to at least take a bit of a closer look at the comp scene of Slovenia. This was only the second year that a World Cup had taken place in Slovenia. The first one took place just the previous year, in 1996. And not to get too far afield here, but the history of the Slovenian comp climbing scene does have some cool parallels with the history of the American comp scene, such as the first ever comp that took place in Slovenia occurred in 1988, and that coincides with the first ever large-scale or international invitational-style comp that took place in the U.S., which was at Snowbird, also in 1988. But that's kind of all beside the point. We're in the 1990s here, and when all is said and done, Chris Sharma really didn't participate in that many World Cups. He did a couple in the lead discipline in 1997. He did a few bouldering World Cups in the early 2000s. But that was really it. And so any chance that we get to put a spotlight on one of those seems like a real treat. And it also seems only fair that we choose one where he won the gold medal. And he did. He won the gold here in Kranj. And I think that makes this World Cup in Kranj sort of a figurative bookend, or a denouement, if you want to get literary, to what began back in 95 with that win at the American national level at the ASCF National Championships. He burst onto the scene there as the youthful phenom. And here, he's a little older, he's a little more experienced, he's gone abroad, and he puts a punctuation mark on all of that. All of the several years leading up to this by winning international gold. And who did he beat? Francois Petit, who had beaten Chris at those World Championships earlier this year, earlier in 1997, that we just put on that list. We just talked about him. Francois Petit gets the bronze here at the Kranj World Cup, and it was Francois Legrand who earned the silver. So that's how the podium ends up looking. We could dive into those other World Cups that Chris participated in. There's one in Austria, there's one in Italy, but there is so much other variety to get into, just in terms of additional comps that he was involved in, additional types of competitions. He was a megastar, by the time 1997 concluded and 1998 rolled around. And then by 1999, he's almost at another level in the climbing world. So maybe it's best to just ride that wave of stardom a little bit and head there next. We've come all this way, and we haven't yet been able to reference any video footage of these historic events that we've been talking about, but that is about to change. This greatest hit that I'm putting on the list next is the bouldering discipline from the 1999 X Games. It took place in San Francisco, which is the same host city as those 1995 ASCF Nationals, interestingly enough. And the date of the final round for these X Games was on Monday, June 28th, 1999. And here's what I mean when I say there's video footage of this. If you go on YouTube, go to the Real Rock channel, and you can find the full 76-minute video of Rampage, which came out that year, 1999, directed by Josh Lowell from Big Up Productions. On a personal note, Rampage is one of my all-time favorite climbing videos. I watched this thing so many times back in the day. I think I might have even had a VHS of it. I know I certainly eventually got the DVD of it. If you've never seen it, it's essentially a bouldering travelogue featuring Chris Sharma and Obi Carrion. They're driving around in an RV, and they're just looking for good rock. They're just searching for enticing bouldering spots. So it's an apt time capsule of the bouldering boom in the United States of the late 1990s, and also of Chris Sharma as the main person, the 18-year-old who was paving the way in the bouldering discipline. So I highly recommend it if you have never seen it. Go watch the whole thing. But for us right now, the important part of the Rampage video, if you go to YouTube, comes around the 40 minute 28 second mark, right around that timestamp. It features footage of the 1999 X Games and of Chris Sharma competing in them. It almost seems like these X Games were a little bit of a break from the grind of just being on the road for a long time, climbing and just kind of dirtbagging it a little bit. We don't get to see the climbing event of the X Games in full, but we do get to see just how hyped the crowd was for Chris at this time, and we get to see also what the route setting was like for comp boulders around 1999. Now, for a more nuanced look at the boulders from these X Games, I found an article that recapped this event and recapped Chris's performance. This was published on mountainzone.com shortly after the event concluded, I assume. It's titled B is for Bouldering, and it's by Hans Prosel. So here are some excerpts. I'll read a little bit from it. Kid Dynamite, Chris Sharma from Santa Cruz, took today's competition at home in front of a lot of friends and family. The young American proved he's back and on track from his ACL snowboarding injury. The four routes themselves resembled four themes containing four inhuman climbing problems. The first route angled out ever so slightly the entire way up. The second had an oblong pyramid slowly sloping down in the middle of the wall. The third resembled a big wave with several inverted moves under its crest. And the last was your standard overhang to wall to overhang, climaxing on a roof undercling hold leap of faith, the big dino. Finalists had 6 minutes with as many tries as possible on each route. and the crowd knew each previous climber's attempt and began barking louder with every new hold attained. The men went first, and everyone had trouble with the second route's pyramid. Yuji Hirayama got the crowd to its feet on the third route, with two attempts ending just inches from the top. Stefan Julien then topped out and kept the crowd's attention, his every hold bringing him closer to bronze. Francois Petit pulled out two top outs, powering past the competition before him and winning the crowd over by finishing the final two problems. Other heroic attempts were made by Salavat Rakhmatov of France, who attacked every route with French style to finish sixth. Daniel Delac showed even more French flair with his stylee sun hat on the wall, landing him seventh. Having qualified first, Chris Sharma kept the crowd waiting. He started slow, with several attempts on the first route before topping out. The second route found him two holds from the top, hugging the pyramid before slowly slipping off. Before he started the third route, he removed the reggae from his ears and let the hometown crowd help him ascend the final two walls. The final finale found Chris's last Dino Deluxe launch a winner, and the crowd erupted. Chris chose for a bit of spontaneous showboating by hanging from his toes from the top. It was, well, awesome. The last competition on our list, it makes sense to go way outside our normal margins and our normal World Cup framework, because this competition circuit that we'll talk about was in and of itself very unique and very outside the normal margins and very pioneering in a way. This event was the Pusher Open, which took place at the Front Climbing Gym in Salt Lake City on August 18th and 19th, 2001. There is footage of it on YouTube. I don't know who posted it, but it is definitely really fascinating to get to view the boulders and the moves. If you want to see the main clip, just type in, quote, PCA Tour Pusher Open, and you'll find it. It's about 9 minutes long, but you can very quickly go down somewhat of a PCA rabbit hole, which is, it's just great. Not only is Chris Sharma in that video clip, but so is Obi Carrion from the Rampage video. Joel Brady's also there, and several other crushers. What's so good about the video is that we get to see just what hard comp climbing was like in an era largely before volumes, but in an era when large climbing holds or macros were starting to appear with a little greater frequency on competition walls. Of course, the Pusher Boss hold was among the most legendary of those really big holds from this era. But there are also, we see good tiny hold climbing too. There are a lot of fingernail crimps on the wall at this Pusher Open. So it's just, it's really good to watch the clip and slip back to this era. But as for this Pusher Open itself, this was the first stop on a three-event series put on by the PCA, who I've mentioned. And the PCA was a fairly short-lived competition organizing body, the acronym standing for the Professional Climbers Association. And this is where the pioneering aspect comes in, because the whole vision of the PCA, even in the name, Professional Climbers, the vision was to make comp climbing more professional and to make comp climbing the biggest thing in the world, or to certainly grow comp climbing to as big as it could possibly be. And to that end, this Pusher Open drew a lot of competitors. There were 200 competitors, Chris Sharma among them, obviously, but there were competitors from all over the world, and the prize payout for this was $20,000. That is a colossal comp purse, even by today's standards. And this was way back in 2001. On top of that, this event packed in 300 spectators into the front who showed up to watch the climbing. And so think that two decades later, comp climbing would kind of sparkle with the glitz of the Olympics and attract thousands of spectators. It would boom in popularity around the globe and basically be one of the fastest growing sports in the world. And here was the PCA seeming to have that vision, maybe not necessarily the Olympic vision, but the vision of comp climbing being capable of untold success and being capable of having its own subculture and its own group of athletes who specialized in comp climbing. The PCA was just way ahead of its time. And going back to Chris Sharma, he was one of the PCA's marquee athletes. And if it all must come down to a memorable performance, and if jubilation is always the best endpoint and the most appropriate way to conclude the list we put together here, then here is how author Wills Young, who was writing for Rock and Ice magazine in the October-November 2001 issue, summarized Chris's battle with another competitor, Malcolm Smith, in the finals at this Pusher Open, ultimately resulting in a victory for Chris. Climbing in last position, Chris Sharma's flash of the opener was surprisingly elegant. Rather than busting a powerful mantle like several others, he gracefully used every foothold. But on the second problem, Sharma reverted to campusing, kicking the holds only to still himself. When he chalked from the headwall sloper that Smith had slapped, then managed to slap the final hold himself, MC Jerry Moffitt led the crowd into a crescendo. On the third problem, Sharma only had enough gas left for one serious attempt. After improving slightly on Smith's high point, he melted. No matter. He'd once again crushed the field, put the crowd on its feet, and stolen the show. Chris Sharma's greatest hits, the 1995 National Championships, the 1997 World Championships, the 1997 Kron World Cup, the 1999 X Games, and the 2001 Pusher Open. Those are the five selections. There are a bunch of honorable mentions that I could have added to the list, I suppose. There's the Gorge Games. There's all the work that Chris has done to popularize deep water soloing and all the competitions that he's helped organize for that. And there's all the competitions that he's organized at his own Sharma climbing gyms in Spain, where he now lives. But let's leave all that for another time, another episode. For now, I'll close with this quote that comes from an article that was a profile of Chris Sharma, published in the Los Angeles Times in 2003. It's titled Karma Climber, and it's by Janet Reitman. And in the article, Chris says of fame and of climbing, quote, "It's a trip how much focus there can be on one person. There's a lot of good climbers. I think I've kind of been in the right place at the right time. It's your own thing. You can do whatever you want. It's all about trying your hardest and pushing your limits. It's very individualistic." Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Past Podiums. Real quick, before we get out of here, thanks again for listening. Thanks to Audio Coffee, Music Town, Photo Cape Breton, Sergey Quadrado, Les FM, and Leisha Cower for doing the music. Special thanks also to Tom Davis and Diane Russell for sharing some insights. And thanks to all the writers who wrote the articles that are cited in the episode. If you'd like to go back and watch the climbing that we just talked about, you can find it on the Real Rock YouTube channel and by searching PCA Tour Pusher Open. See you next time.